Dear brothers and sisters, God made man divine in nature. God is spirit, and we are spirit in man. Therefore it is said, know ye not that you are the true temple of God. The body that you are carrying is the true temple of God, because Holy Ghost resides in it. Then who you are but the spirit in man? If spirit is eternal, why we fear that we will die? So great is man, all masters are reputed. We are of the same essence as that of God. We have been given this man body to enable us just realize that spirit or God which is already in us. But that will be done only when we know ourselves. God is light. When he wanted the world should come up, then there was light. And that light comes within each of us. So all masters have been saying like that, take heed that the light within you is not darkness. So soul is of the same essence as that of God. And the light of spirit shineth in darkness, that means body, and the darkness apprehended it not. So we are great in man, that's the point. All masters tell us like that. Our true home is not this man body that has been given to us. It is a golden opportunity, of course, we have had. Ever since we were separated from God, so far we have not reached back our home. The point is, God, now we are identifying with the body darkness, so much so that we never dream of whether the light is within us or not. So on that account only, we are not happy. Had we known the spirit in us, we are of the same divine nature as the God himself. Had we known that, then as such we are all equal. God has given us the same privileges, even physically, born the same way, outer inner construction the same, the same divine spirit within us, but being under control of mind, we are identified with the body and all outside world so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. So Master come out to tell us that you are spirit in man, God is light, and that light dwelleth in each one of us. As such, we are all children of light, brothers and sisters in God. Physically also, and spiritually also, and intellectually also, we are in the same place of God. So masters come up, they want to make us realize who you are, what you are. They say you are conscious entities, drop of the ocean of all consciousness, but environed by mind and matter so much so that you've forgotten yourself. So they tell us, O man, know thyself, who you are, what you are. We have the body, of course. We have got the intellect, no doubt. But we have them, we are conscious at this. If we know by self-analysis, by rising of our body consciousness, then we find we are of the same nature as that of God. We are spirit and man. We are of the same essence as that of God. Only as being identified in the world, so much so that we have forgotten all. A saint told us, "O man, you committed a heinous crime against your own self." And people ask him, "How?" He says, "You are the indweller of the world. You are the Holy Ghost. You are the children of light. But that you have simply got the man body to enable you to realize yourself and to realize God, but you have been identified with it, yet you are just forgotten yourself." So far that masters come and tell us, "Please look to your Godhead. You are princes of God, you are micro-gods, invited by mind and matter, just growing on the earth like anything." So masters make us realize, when they give us all this theory and teachings, then when we realize, they give a little demonstration also of that, how to rise above body consciousness. Then we naturally pray, "O God, you are the high heavens, and we are here groaning in the man body, in the earth. How can we reach thee?" So when this is the Arjuna arises from within, then the God who is there, he is earth, he is with us, he is heaven without us. He makes some arrangement to send somebody who can make us realize who we are and what we are. So masters, when they came, they solved this mystery of life, and they made us also realize that thing by giving us a demonstration of that, how to rise above body consciousness, how to know ourselves. So all masters of the East of the West all gave out the same thing. Greek philosophers, Latin philosophers, Persian philosophers, all saints of the East said the same thing, of course in their own language. So this is the first step. We can proceed on the way back to God. So for that reason, masters come and make us realize who we are writing, by giving the demonstration of it. Because we do not realize unless we see things with our own eyes. So they say, "What is this sign?" These religions came into being after that. So as to when they left the scene, they were made only for the purpose that their teachings may remain alive. And many people may derive benefit from that, of how to know oneself and to know God. So as long as they are practical to people, the purpose of sound, for want of practical people, these formations dwindle down into stagnation, and stagnation results in deterioration. Then saints come up again, "Well, man, look thyself. You are taken up the labels of the man body. These are only to show in which school you are giant, to know yourself, to know your divine nature." So these religions were made for the man. Man was not made for the religions. He had to make the best of the religion. That school is better who turn out perfect man. So must come up to revival, how to know ourselves. Practically, who we are, what is our connection with the body, whether we can rise above body consciousness. So you will find what is spirituality. Spirituality is not the customs or rituals or performances that you perform at the level of the senses. They are God exalted side. That is only meant for preparation of the ground to know oneself and to know one. That is not spirituality, that is the ground on which building of spirituality can be raised. But true spirituality what? To know the spirit in man. Spirituality means the quality of spirit to know yourself, that you are spirit in man. It is purely a knowledge of self-analysis, to know oneself and to know the Overself and know God by practical self-analysis, by sitting at the feet of some adept in that way, which are called masters, and give you a demonstration of that. To know oneself, to know the spirit in man, know the name God into expression power, which is controlling the whole universe and all, and permeating all creation, and which is the controlling power of us in the body too. To know that, that is called spirituality. Don't confound it with this spiritualism, which is only a contact with the groaning spirits, those who have left the body and grounded on the earth. A contact with that, that is no spirituality. Further spirituality, no spiritualism, there's also contact with the souls which have left the world, and they are little higher than those spirits growing from the earth. To contact with that also, that is no spirituality. If you contact with them, they will give you only up to the level they progressed on the way. They are not more than one where here when leave the body. So it is also no hypnotism to hypnotize us by radiation, nor it is mesmerism. So it is purely a matter of self-analysis, knowing oneself and knowing God, knowing the spirit in man. People confound it with other things. So when we know ourselves, what do we know? That we are the enlivening, we are who are enlivening the man body, the factory of the man body. Suppose there is a factory outside which is run by powerhouse, they have got so many departments of the factory, each department has a link with the powerhouse. So they are working. When you want to stop any department of the factory, we take up that link from that department, and that department sees it to work. If you want to stop the whole factory, take up the main link, and the whole factory stops. Similar, this mind body is working. We are going around playing this and that thing. When that connection is taken up, body is in art. Machine lies in tech. Everything is there, but the driver is gone. And that power that keeps on the body, that is we know. So body works as long as we are in the body. And we are in the body, you know, as long as some power is controlling us in the body. So similarly, in this man body, when masters come, they give us a demonstration of knowing ourselves, how to rise above body consciousness by self-analysis. Then we see it is on account of we, this active work. Now, what will happen now? that our soul is under the control of mind, mind is under the control of outgoing faculty, and outgoing faculty is driven like anything from the outward environment. We are who give strength to the man, to the mind, to the body, to the outgoing faculty. Instead of that, they are dragging us. The whole thing is topsy-turvy. The horse had to carry the carriage, and the carriage is put before the horse. So master this thing, give us a demonstration into it. Then we know such a man who has risen above body consciousness and known himself as a come in contact with God, that he knows which how the faculty likes to work. He is not driven like anything. That's the difference between an average man and the man who has risen above body consciousness at will. He knows himself what he is, and he further knows that higher power that is controlling us in the body and controlling all universe. So he may be with eyes open, not see, because his attention is not there. With his ears open, he may not be hearing. So it is all the feet of this, what we call attention, sota. So the sota or attention is directed in the man body, or to the different outgoing faculties they work, and when that is not along with them, they don't work. Those who know by the grace of the God in men to rise above body consciousness, say 100 times a day at will, their angular vision is changed. They see the world in some other light. They say, we are the driver of this man body, it is on account of all things the world is going. So masters come up and they give us a constant realizers that they do the job of the ocean of consciousness. So as such, you will find you are all equally situated by God, no high, no low. And man body also, and intellectual way, the same thing. With all these advancements of physical and intellectual way, we are not happy because the third side we have no doubt about. When they see like that, they see we are all of the same essence of God, we are all brothers and sisters of God. And we worship the same God power into special power which is controlling us in the body. So, the objective of all religions is what? The objective of all religions is divine beatitude and beatific vision of God. One thing. And to turn out ideal men. The schools are there, you see. They are meant to turn out successful students to have highest degrees. Whichever school turns out more men like that, students like that, they are creditable. If the schools are there, very big halls, good playing grounds, good dresses of the students, but no student comes out successful. So master said after two objects of the religion on the earth. One, objective religion is divine beatitude and beatific vision of God. And the other thing, to turn out ideal men. So, there are hundreds and thousands of people in all religions whose main purpose is to know God. Although I've forgotten, that's another thing. Master come to revive that forgotten lesson they want to again put before them. Oh man, go, don't be misguided. The highest aim that you can attain in man body is to know God. And in no other body. So man body is the golden opportunity that we have got, in which we can know God. So two things I told you, all masters say like that. So, to turn out what you say, perfect man is our idea. Be perfect as the Father is in heaven. избавит. Similarly, man and God are fully embedded in each other. If therefore behoves man to reflect the light of God around him, God is soul of his soul and his body is the veritable temple of God. Man is embodied truth, for truth is his very life. Without the light of truth, how can man live? When death is done, man has to leave the body. So God speaks to a human pole. Without such a pole, how can we know ourselves? How can God express himself to the world? So we need somebody who has that life and can give us an experience of that life within us. So all masters have been coming again and again to revive to this very subject which we have forgotten, the highest name of man-body. Hazrat Attar, the saint, tells us, O man, thou art the very center of creation. In fact, the very macrocosm and the microcosm. Man is wonderful house we live in, you see. Macrocosm has three planes, physical, astral and causal. And we have also been given three planes and to cross it. We have been given body to work, you know, in the physical world, in the physical world, in the physical body. At the time of death, the physical is shaken off body, we rise into astral body, and astral world is there, then the causal world is there. And beyond all these three, the safest to whom the Father, by degrees. So he tells us, thou art the living book of God, for in through thee alone God speaks and reveals himself. God does not speak from heaven directly, see? He speaks through the man. If man were to take care of his Godhood and make it a practical work, as a principle, the world will become a heaven on earth. It will become a real place of the pure. So the only ideal for man is to be perfect and complete. Saint Paul said, you are complete in Godhood. I am quoting all these things to let you know what the scriptures tell us. We belong to those isms, to those scriptures, to those religions. We do not know what our scriptures say. We are great in man. So, very religion enjoins the worship of perfect men too, who are at one with God. Amongst the six, they are supposed to turn to khalsa. Khalsa means pure. And the definition is given, he is the khalsa pure man in whom God's light is effulgent. All light is effulgent. Similarly, you will find in the Mohammedans, those who want to become Mohammedan, who see the light of God. In Hinduism also, they light candles outside, and also to light the candle with. And Christian also sees the light of God, take it that the light within you is not darkness. So all have got the same degree, but we have forgotten. So that is why Master comes from time to time to revise us to this truth which we have forgotten. All other bodies of the creation have been made subservient to man. God, man is considered to be the next to God. When the angels bow down, are to bow down before the man body. To Ruskin, likewise expresses the same truth. He says, there is no wealth but life. their worship of light, of life. If life is empty, who cares for the man body? If the lamp is, I got no eyes, no wick, no sense, who cares for the lamp? If the bulb is fused, who cares for the bulb? So there is no wealth but life, life including all its powers of love, peace and admiration. The country is the richest, which nourishes the greatest number of noble and happy human beings. The country is the richest. That man is the richest who, having perfected the function of his own life to the utmost, has also the widest helpful influence, both permeated and by means of the possession of the other's life. So such life, worship of such man is given up by all scriptures. Naturally, he commands to say. So we have got, so this science, to know oneself, we are spirit in man, we are eternal, never dying, man's body has been given the golden opportunity in which we can realize that. So this practical subject is God's spirituality. Not only having the labels of one religion or this, that makes no difference. So Master tells us always, the knowledge of all knowledge is what? To know oneself. The Persian philosophers tell us. We have dwelt physically, of course, and intellectually, and not spiritually. O seekers after God, you have lost Him in the very whirlpool of the sense. We are given up, identified with the senses outside. So much so that we have forgotten ourselves, who we are, what we are. So the world religion means what? To bind, reach back, need you to bind one back to God. And the word yoga also means the same. Yoga means, comes from the root yuj, means to unite. Unite us with God. So fortunately, together do the two dwell in close association in the same abode, in the same body. And strange enough, what as it may seem, the two have never conversed with each other. We are also in the body, and the power which controls us in the body is also there, but strange enough, we have never thought of that, and we go around seeking anywhere else. Kabir said, I went to pay pilgrimage to Makkah. On the way God met me and rebuked me, who told you I am there, I am with you, on the very life of you. So all masters tell us like that. They say you, and that God power is both within this man body. And where are you? You are just identified with your world outside. Why don't you withdraw your attention from outside? He is waiting for you within you. So it is hold the feet of attention. This is tension is what? The drop of the ocean of all attention. You are great in man, you can work wonders. If you put in that attention in your body, you become physically strong, restless. You know when you exercise, they put whole attention in the body. If you put in your attention to the centers of the brain within you, you become intellectually strong. So this is the whole feat of attention, you see. And Master says, look here, you and God both are lying in the same bed. You are sleeping, awake outside. Why not sleep outside and awaken? He is waiting for you. So religion, in fact, what it is, it's a way back to God. That's all. Nothing else. And we have considered to be something else. Religion, in fact, is a way back to God, or a link, linking the soul with God, the old. that religion is blessed, you've done no such thing.
Well, good morning, and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kripal Singh. The recording you just heard was the first half of a public talk that Master gave at the San Francisco Unitarian Church on November 13, 1972. Our reader this morning is Eileen Pokorny. Hello, Eileen.
Good morning, everybody. We will be reading from The Wheel of Life, starting from the introduction, and it's called Justice and Grace. And this was a talk given by Sant Kripal Singh Ji at Kripal Ashram, Calais, Vermont, in October 12, 1963. There is a law of justice, and there is a law of grace. Both of them, they are both laws. It is just like when you light a candle. The light is above, and the darkness below. If you have a bulb, then the light is below, and the darkness above. So both are the laws working in the world. Sowing a seed. That's a point to be understood. When you sow a seed, it will bring forth similar seeds. There is action and reaction. Then again, a reaction. And the thing goes on like that. There's no end to it. After sowing the grain, a man cannot stop having a harvest. The fruit will come. So there are many actions. Actions of one kind, but there are three aspects to them. There are certain actions which we are doing now, daily, fresh actions. Fresh seeds are sown, you might say. Some have already been sown and are bearing fruit. Others have been sown but are not yet bearing forth fruit. So there are three kinds of karmas or actions. Our present life depends on those reactions of the past karmas which are bearing fruit. They are called pralabdha karma. On that karma, our length of life is based. According to that, some people get children, some die, some are ugly, some are old, some have give and take. This is based on those karmas or seeds which have grown in the past and are now bearing forth fruit in action. This you cannot change. When a railroad line is laid down, the train will run over it. Before you lay down any railroad line, it's up to you to lay it down this way or that way. But once it is laid down, the train will have to run over it. So as I told you, some karmas are bearing fruit, some we are doing fresh, and others have not yet borne any fruit. That will come up in due course. So we are independent within certain limits to do some actions, and we are also bound to some extent. Action, reaction, action, reaction goes on. There's no end to it. When a master meets someone, he does not touch the present reactions which are coming up, for our life is based on that. He lets it alone. He lets it go on. But he does two things. For the future, he lays down a line of conduct beyond which we should not transcend. Don't think evil of anybody, even in mind, not to speak in word or in deed. Be truthful, even in mind. Don't think up anything wrong. Acting and posing, scheming, polishing, doing something underground, and then above board doing something else. And further, be chaste, even in mind, word, and deed. And have love for all, because all men are alike. They have the same privileges that each one of us has. So love all, because God is in the hearts of all, whether they are rich or poor, whether they are learned or unlearned. They have the same privileges from God that you have. Also, do not hate others, even in mind, word, or deed. And further, when you are to love God and love all humanity, then you must give selfless service, not selfish service, for love knows service and sacrifice. Selfish service will again cause a reaction to come. If you serve selflessly for the sake of others, for the sake of God and others, then that won't bear forth fruit. As for the present actions which we are having, reactions, these are also softened down, or polished down, you might say, by the Master. How? By giving some bread of life to your soul, so that your soul becomes strong. Suppose a fight is going on. One man is weak and the other is strong. They come to blows, this and that thing. The one poor fellow who is very weak gets one blow and is stunned. He cries out, "I am killed." And the others who are strong say, "We don't mind. We have had so many blows, but we don't give a fig for it." Why is this? Because they are strong. Reactions do come up, but for those who have strong souls, who have the bread of life, they lose their pinching effect. For the future, Master lays down a line of conduct. For the present, which is bearing fruit, he gives food to the soul so that it will become strong, and there will not be any pinching effect. And for those that are not yet bearing forth fruit, he gives the disciple a contact with God within. By coming in contact with God within, when his inner eye is open, he sees that he is the doer of all, that we are mere puppets in his hands. He becomes a conscious co-worker of the divine plan. The result is that there is no I-hood left, and all those actions which were sown in the past and are still awaiting fruit are burned away. Who is there to burn the fruit? So this is the way in which you can escape from the reactions of the past. If you say, "Oh, I can do this and that," with a little I-hood in it, so long as you are the doer, you have to bear the reaction of it. When no doer is left, then God is the doer. You are absolved. There is a story given in the Quran, a scripture of the Mohammedans. There was once a saint who from his very childhood had left the world to reside in a jungle. Here, fortunately, you will find enough water, electricity, everything else. But there was nothing like that. For miles and miles around there was no water and nothing to eat. So he used to pray to God, and God had made some arrangements to take care of him. One small spring sprouted forth, and from that, very sweet water was flowing. And he used to drink from that. And they say there was a pomegranate tree, and each day one pomegranate was born by the tree. He used to eat that pomegranate and drink the water and pass his days. It is said that after long, long years, 70 or 80 years, he died. He was presented to the court of God. God looks at him. All right, we forgive you as a matter of grace. His eyes open wide. Well, all through life I've been killing myself doing this sort of penance and that sort of penance. And with all that, I am being forgiven as a matter of grace, as an act of grace only? In his heart of hearts, he thought perhaps that was a very great injustice that was being done. God read his mind and said, well, would you like us to make an account of your own actions? Yes, you may please. All right, look here. In that jungle, there was no water for miles and miles altogether. One spring was created there, only for you, especially for you. And there was a pomegranate tree. Each day it bore one big pomegranate. No tree can bear forth one fruit daily. So that is your compensation for all you've done. Now let us account for your other actions. You were walking along the way and some insect died, trampled down under your feet. You must be trampled down as you trampled down. Further, you did this and that. The saint thought that perhaps matters had gotten worse and said, all right, please excuse me, forgive me, if you will like to. Masters come not to break the law, but to fulfill the law as a matter of redemption by grace, not as action, reaction. Guru Nanak says, with actions, you can have reactions. As you sow, so shall you reap. But redemption comes only by grace. All masters say so. Of course, it does not mean that we should be vicious. We should restrict ourselves according to the commandments that the masters have given us. Another thing you might want to know about it is a father has a child who does not obey him. He commits some offense, something like that. What would the father do? Would he send him to the police? I don't think so. No father would permit his son to be sent to the police. He might slap him once or twice, but he would never send him to the police. So similarly, when you come to a master, the God in him, you are all his children. He doesn't send you on a regular course to bear the fruit of what you've sown. That's the concession. Otherwise, how long would you continue like that? First, there's the seed, and then there's the tree. And there are many seeds, and again a tree. Is the egg before the hen, or the hen before the egg? Where is the end? So it's a matter of redemption by grace. It's something like that, so that you can understand it. Unless you become conscious co-worker of the divine plan, there's no escape, no emancipation. As you sow, so shall you reap. That goes on like that for aeons and aeons of time. Question, do we have to work it all off on this physical plane, all the karmas that we have, like the B-type karma that we are working off in this life? What about the things that we are doing now or have done in this lifetime? What if we're not finished up by the time we die? The Master, I think I have replied to you, and you have not followed it. When you become a conscious co-worker of the divine plan, when you become selfless, who will bear whatever actions you have done? Furthermore, that is why all masters say, be desireless. Master tries to wind up all your reactions of the past, just as I told you, by giving you strength, by giving the bread of life to your soul, so that the reactions which are coming up will not be pinching you, But he doesn't touch them. Otherwise, as soon as a man was initiated, he would die. For that reason, they are not touched. For the future, he lays down a line of conduct. For the past, if you become selfless, a conscious co-worker, then nothing will come up. Guru Nanak says, O Master, what is the use of coming to your feet if, when coming here, we still have to bear the fruit of all the actions which we have done in the past? He gives an example. What is the use of going to the feet of a lion if still jackals come and howl at you? So that is a great blessing. Now the question may arise, what is a master? A master is a man like you. Each one of us has the same privileges. The difference lies only in the fact that although God resides in every heart, in the heart of a master, he is now manifest. Master is a conscious co-worker. That is, he is doing it. It is not he who is speaking, but the God in him. Who is speaking? He becomes a mouthpiece of God. We can also become the mouthpiece of God. Every saint has a past, and every sinner a future. How has he become the mouthpiece of God? The man who has reached that stage can also give you the same thing. On the very first day when he initiates you, he withdraws and drags your soul above body consciousness and gives you a contact with light and sound principle of God. That is the way back to the ultimate absolute God. When you become quite conscious of all that, you will see that it is he that is doing, not I. So when all reactions are finished, it is just like having a few grains of seeds which have been roasted in the oven. Even if you sow them, they won't bear forth fruit. They will not grow. It is something like that. And that is the end of the introduction. And we will go on to chapter 1. And here's a quote from the Galatians. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Confronted with the complexities of earthbound life, man struggles for a way out. Wherever he turns, he finds his upward flight thwarted by unseen barriers. Why all the seeming inequalities in the world? Why is man's way blocked to his primal home, the home of his heavenly Father? Why cannot man redeem his unknown past? Where should he turn for the saving light of the pure science of being? These queries, it leads to the investigation of the universal law of action and reaction. The term karma frequently appears in various Indian philosophical and religious writings. Indeed, it has been so often bandied about by priests and preachers that it may have come to consider it was an imaginary stumbling block in the path of spiritual salvation. Being a term foreign to the West, usually it is passed on without sufficient clarification. All the masters of the lower reaches or grades of ascent speak of liberation through performing action without attachment to and desire for the fruit or result thereof. This, however, is but a partial truth and a halfway knowledge. The mind is accustomed to taste the fruit of its actions. How will it give up this habit? Sadhas, or the mental and physical exercises, may be employed as instruments to discipline the mind to a certain extent. But in the long run, the mind's habit of enjoying its experiences will assert itself. The mind can give up worldly pleasures only when it gets something kind of a higher pleasure. The saints have experienced a far more exquisite pleasure, ecstatic bliss, by contact with Nam, the Word of God or Divine Sound Principle. Once absorbed in this sound current or Nam, the mind is drawn away from the world. The mind has the habit of running after worldly objects and jumping from one thing to another. But we have to do, then, is not to stop its flux, which is but a natural characteristic, but only to turn its direction from downwards into the world outside to upwards into the world within. This means harnessing the wandering wits and channeling the mental energy into a proper course as would ensure results that are of a lasting and permanent nature. This comes through regular practice or absorption in Nam. This is the only method by which the mind may gradually be trained and ultimately render in cohesis with sublimitation of the mental currents. The soul comes to its own and can proceed encumbered and unhampered on its way to its original source. The oversoul or also. Thus the saint who have themselves trodden this path, the path of Surat Shabd Yoga, absorption in the holy word or the sacred sound, can also not only enable us to free ourselves from the karmic cycle of action and reaction, but also provide us an access into the kingdom of God, which lies within. Now the question arises, how can the karmas be wound up or rendered ineffective? In the labyrinth of the laws of nature, in which we are excruciatingly involved, there is an outlet provided for those who are really in search of self-knowledge and God-knowledge. The action to this outlet, or way out of the dense jungle of karmas, spreading far back to immemorial past, is made manifest by the saving grace of the true Master. Once he has taken us in his fold and contacted us with the eternal holy word or sound current, we are put out of the reach of Yama, or the angel of death, representing the negative aspect of the supreme power and the dispenser of justice in the universe, to each according to his action. Every act of a living being done knowingly or unknowingly, irrespective of whether it is yet in the stage of latency or thought form, a mental vibration, or is uttered by words of mouth, or is actually done by a physical act, constitutes karma. Lest the reader get confused by the term karma, it is better to understand this word in its proper context. Originally, the word karma stood for and represented sacrificial rites and rituals, and yajas performed by individuals as prescribed by the sacred texts. Later on, however, it came to include all kinds of virtues, social and self-purifying, like truthfulness, purity, abstinence, continence, ahimsa, universal love, selfless service, and all deeds of charitable nature, In short, a great stress was laid on the cultivation of the Atma Gunas, which tend to the disciple, the mind, and divert the mental powers in the right direction, so as to serve the higher purpose of liberating Atma, or the spirit in bondage. Karmas are generally classified as prohibited, permitted, and prescribed. All karmas that are degrading and derogatory in nature are classified as prohibited, because indulgence in vices is sinful and the wages of sin are death. Next come karmas that are upgrading and help a person in attaining higher planes. These are karmas performed for the fulfillment of one's benevolent desires and aspirations, and as such are permissible and therefore permitted. Finally, we have karmas, the performance of which is considered obligatory, as enjoined by the scriptures for persons belonging to different social orders. Priestly classes engage in the study and teaching of scriptures, or the warrior race consisting of fighting forces for the purposes of defense, or the people engaged in commercial or agricultural pursuits, or the people serving the foregoing three classes. And at different stages in one's life, called ashrams, which are corresponding roughly to the formidable period of one's education, the stage of a married family life as a householder, the ascetic stage of a recluse or a hermit engaged in deep meditation in the solitude of a forest, and lastly, the stage of a spiritual pilgrim giving to the people the fruit of his lifelong experience, each of these portions being of 25 years, computing the lifespan to be of 100 years duration. These karmas are the performance of which is a must for each from day to day in his vocation and period of life. As a code of moral conduct, the law of karma makes valuable contributions to man's material and moral well-being on earth and paves the way to a better life in the future. In all the four spheres of human life, secular, material, or economic, religious, and spiritual, as denoted by the terms kama, fulfillment of one's desires, artha, economic and material well-being, dharma, moral and religious basis upholding and supporting the universe, and moksha, salvation, deeds or karmas play a vital part. It is, of course, the moral purity that figures as a motivating force for attaining success in one's endeavor. In order that the karmas bear the desired fruit, it is necessary that they be performed with single-minded and purposeful attention and loving devotion. Well, I have come to the end of the reading, and we were reading from The Wheel of Life. We covered the introduction and the first chapter up to page 4. Thank you, Master, for allowing us to gather and receive your holy blessings.
And thank you, Eileen, for reading for us. There were 91 people at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
You have been just given this man's body, and by the grace of God, to enable you to go back to your home. But remain here, pay off your debts, give them takes, you see. and find your way back to God.